Okay, hello, hello. This is Osman with the House Einstein podcast. This is podcast number 14. And today we're going to be talking about benchmarking the competition. And by that, we're not talking about competition between agents, although we certainly benchmark that as well and always are seeking to beat our competitors by providing better service. What we're actually talking about is benchmarking listing competition. So let's say you've listed your house with an agent. Oh, hold on, back up. I didn't introduce Hamish. And with me is Hamish Crabb.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. And this is also entertainment.
Oh, thank you for the reminder, Hamish. I tend to just jump right in, don't I? Okay, this is entertainment, not legal, financial, or even real estate advice. If you happen to be one of our clients or are interested in being a client, reach out to us at houseeinstein.com. You can click on the team page. There are a number of agents with us. You can also contact me directly. You'll find my contact information at houseeinstein.com. And best to consider this podcast as pure entertainment for your listening and viewing pleasure if you're on YouTube. And that keeps the attorneys happy, doesn't it?
Sure does.
All right. So today we're talking about benchmarking the listing competition, a listings competition. So let's say you've listed your home with an agent, and now what? What happens? A lot of
radio
agents.
Silence.
Nothing. You get a first weekend of busy showings, and then you maybe start getting fewer showings that next week, and then fewer showings until it kind of reaches steady state, and nothing's happening. You're wondering what's going on. And your agent's saying it's all good. I've checked it out. It's fine. Well, is it really? So what should your agent be doing? And what do we do? And let's draw it a little bit in contrast, because after 20 years in this business, we have systems for managing our listings. And the way we do that, first and foremost, is to do our homework before we list the house. And that means looking at the competition for your specific home, our client's specific home, price range, location, condition, and only a fraction of that is possible by looking at the MLS, by looking at listings on Zillow or any other website or using the MLS itself, which is what brokers use. There's only so much information you can gather about the competition from that. You have to go see these homes in person. And many agents will schedule previews, is what they're called, to go do that. And surprisingly, many agents do not. As it happens right now, we have about a 50-50 split between our buyers and our sellers. And of our current sellers, of my current sellers, my listings, only a handful of agents have scheduled previews. And either that, or they've scheduled them as showings and not told me they didn't bring a client, that it really was a preview. It's part of the real estate community to help each other accurately price homes. And it's just astounding how often agents don't actually go and look at the competition. Because from the photos, you cannot actually tell the true condition of the home. Go ahead.
Yeah, they're made for sales, right? They're trying to only show the positives.
Exactly. They are a sales vehicle. They are the MLS may have some accurate information about the number of bedrooms and baths, although not always even that. You might be able to pinpoint the location on a map and maybe some other basic details, but you cannot actually tell the condition of the home without an on-the-ground site tour. We do this on the buy side too for our relocation clients that are interested in a home that are thinking about flying out here for the weekend. We try to get there and do a video of the home prior to them getting here because, again, you cannot tell what the home is really like without actually scheduling a showing and going and looking at it personally. I just got back from Breckenridge and I drove up there. And even though this is not a high-end deal, it's the cheapest or one of the least expensive properties you can buy in Breckenridge right now. It deserves the same level of service. And I went and looked at the key competitor for us, which is located only a couple of buildings away from our listing. And without that visit, we wouldn't really know. We were going to have to make a lot of assumptions on what this competitor looks like. And it turns out that there is some key distinctions. That listing is a little closer to the Riverwalk. It's a little closer to downtown, has some views over downtown. Our listing is a true ski in, ski out unit. That listing is bigger. Our listing is a little more dated. But if you actually use this during the winter, there is nothing more magical than literally skiing to your door and then putting on your boots when you're ready to go back on the lift. And the lift is like, it is a 5 minute walk. It's not a big trudge, right?
It's nothing.
It's not a horrible walk from the other listing either, but it is a lot further. And the location of the other listing is in a mixed use building with some poor quality retail below it. And I don't want to go into actual specifics because we're not going to disparage our listing, but this helps us understand why is there a 10% difference in pricing between these two listings, approximately 10%. And it's leading our clients to agree it's time for a price reduction. Higher rates are slowing down the short-term rental market in BREC and as well as all real estate. But we wouldn't have known that if I didn't hop in the car and go drive the 2 hours from my house to BREC, look at this listing, think about it, and drive back. And, you know, interestingly, I invited the listing agent of this competitor to come meet me and let's look at these together and make sure we have these positioned correctly with respect to each other. And she couldn't make it, is what she said. But I texted her that night. I called her in the morning, texted her again, and only then did she respond. And it was like, you know, the vibe I totally got was this is not a priority for her. And the number of days it had been on the market also reflected, I think, the fact it's not a priority for her. And with our other listings here in Boulder, my other listings, again, same story. I'm not getting phone calls from other agents to schedule these previews. And I honestly don't know how they're pricing these homes without this work. At least not accurately. And prices, by the way, also change. So one of the most important things that an agent can be doing once it's listed is tracking the competitors. So we will, at a minimum once a week, go look at who the competitors are, which ones have gone under contract, have the prices changed, and we can call and often do call the other listing agents that have our competitor homes to see how we can potentially collaborate to make sure that we are doing the best we can for our client. And of course, we represent our individual clients, but that doesn't mean we can't price these things intelligently within a spectrum of what they should be like on the market. And, you know, we're not colluding on pricing, but we are pricing appropriately, right? Like if you have and we love to do car examples, if you have a Mercedes and a Honda and a Lexus, well, which ones are actually competitors and who are you benchmarking against? And you need to know those things, whether you're pricing a new product line in the automotive space or you are pricing homes in a particular location and price range in Boulder or anywhere, really. And there's a magic system, Hamish, called the MLS that can actually automate these alerts for you. If any new home shows up or there's a price change or there's a status change, it can email you and the seller. How hard is this? And yet, I don't think most agents are doing it. So
I think it's mostly like a set and forget mindset for a lot of agents when they, you know, land a listing.
Yeah, it's sort of like they have baited the fish hook and they've thrown it out there. And the only thing they're going to do is sit there waiting for the fish hook to bob, you know, the little bobber in the water to bounce to know there's a fish on the line. It really is astounding at the lack of care, the lack of effort.
It's like proactiveness, right?
Maybe there's not a realtor university to teach agents how to do this. So here we are on the podcast. Well, yeah. I don't think there is, unfortunately. Some of the big brokerages, you know, the warehouses of real estate agents, the Compasses, the Remaxes, the Coldwell Bankers that have thousands of agents, right? Just massive warehouses of agents, most of whom do a few deals a year, if any. Most of them do at least one deal a year. Why are you keeping your license active? But the vast majority of agents do very few deals. And unfortunately, even the training programs at those big brokerages, in my experience, having taken one of them, Remax's training years and years ago, are not particularly impressive. And they don't teach you systems to really serve your clients. And this is one of them. So if you're sitting there on a stale listing, you own one, and you haven't heard from your agent, and your agent just says everything's fine, here's the question to ask them. Have you been to the competition? Or can you take me to see the competition? What's going on with the other listings? Have you called the other agents to ask how many offers have they gotten?
Are other things moving? You know, like, is it just me?
Right. Is it just me? What's going on? And
yeah,
if you hear an answer that smells like bullshit, pardon my language, if you hear an answer that sounds like bullshit, it probably is. Because a lot of agents, in the absence of knowledge of how to deal with the market, will fill in the gap with ad hoc answers that are actually not what they're – ask what they're actually doing. Ask, did you actually go physically look at my competitor? Did you – oh, it looks like the competitor's under contract. Did you call the listing agent to see what you're under contract – what they're under contract for? And who's the buyer's agent? Which, by the way, they are not – obliged to tell you, but they're also not, at least here in the state of Colorado, there's no word confidential in the contract to buy and sell. They can tell you who the agent is, who the buyer is, what the price is, if they want to. And this is one of the reasons we keep really good relationships with our colleagues. They don't usually tell us the names because, first, it doesn't benefit anybody other than create risk to their client. But they will tell us more often than not what they're under contract for. And, other terms of the contract, the closing date, for example, which could affect the comps. Because if your neighbor is, let's say your neighbor's selling the identical house as yours and they accepted a lowball. And guess what's going to happen when that lowball hits the comp set, when it actually closes? Well, now you have a bad comp or a low comp in the data set that the appraiser is going to look at for your listing. So that may impact your strategy as a seller. And you should be having that conversation with your listing agent.
But preferably before the listing agreement.
Well, you should choose your agent carefully before you've signed a listing agreement.
And that, you know, we've got the marketing and communications plan that we send alongside, which has duties set out that we will continue to do even after the home is listed, you know?
That's right. So here in the state of Colorado, there is a box in the standard commission-approved contract to buy and sell that says, what is the agent actually doing beyond the standard duties, right? What are the marketing tasks that they are doing? The standard duties are the standard duties. We don't edit those, but we used to just put things in the box. One of our colleagues here in Boulder would just write the words full service in the box. And I know I saw it, right? Without defining what is full service.
That's fantastic. That,
when I saw what she was writing into her listing agreements, and I can't remember why she sent it to me, but she sent me her listing agreement. And I was just astounded, right? Because she's a top agent. She does a lot of volume. And from that point forward, I started to add that marketing and communications plan. And there was another client, a repeat client, who pushed me as well, who said, Osman, you've listed and sold multiple homes for the family, and you've helped me buy homes, and you've done a great job, but I would like to know what you're actually going to do. Like, and particularly, what are you going to do once our home's listed to help us track data, track the competitors, know what's going on in the market? I need that to be clearly defined if I'm going to sign another listing agreement with you. And I was like, huh, good point. Okay. And so now we have this marketing and communications plan, and it says we will reach out to our client once a week with feedback on the showings that have occurred. And we will apprise them of a changing market on a regular basis. And that's in addition to all the marketing things that we do. This is not just, this is the feedback collection phase.
Right.
But it also defines the videography, the photography, the showing service that we utilize. It is a detailed plan for how we manage our listings. But what they don't understand, right, and this is something I think the vast majority of sellers don't understand, is that automated feedback is garbage. You rarely get useful information from automated feedback.
If any at all.
If any feedback, right. So automated feedback is you schedule the – Hamus goes and shows a property, and afterward he gets an email through the showing service, which could be Showing Time. It could be Broker Bay. It could be a variety of companies. Some offices even do their own showing service in-house. It's rare, but they do. And then it's an automated email you get after the showing that says, please provide feedback. And it asks specific questions. What do you think about the price? Is there anything the seller can do to improve the marketability of this property? What did your buyer think? What did you think? Anything
they're,
we could
they're
do.
Very like closed questions, yeah. right? You know, some of them yeah. are just a drop down with an answer you can't expand, yeah. and there's not really, yeah.
It's garbage. And most agents ignore the automated feedback email. And so that's why we started calling. So early in the week, usually Monday or Tuesday, we are calling all the showings that have occurred on our listings, and we're trying to actually have a conversation with the agent that did the showing, because we want to know, is there, in addition to, is the price right? Is there anything we can do to improve it? We also want to know, is there anything we can do to bring your client to the table to submit an offer? What would make this property work for your client? And you never know what the answer will be.
I've got a call today, you know, like you yeah. check it.
Yeah, you check. I mean, some agents do this, but the vast majority do not. And if we don't get a call back, we switch to text and we ping them a couple of times to try to get some feedback. But some agents just won't do it. They're just too busy or too lazy or too inconsiderate or too unprofessional to actually give back into the real estate community and give authentic, useful feedback. And I know you're not supposed to disparage our colleagues, well, but I'm criticizing by category, not by name.
And I'm also, I'm going to give a benefit of the doubt thing here too. They could just not remember. If you have a whirlwind of showings, they might, you know, maybe the house was just unremarkable to them.
All right. Well, you're kinder than I am, Hamish. Yeah. I'm a little judgy. it turns out I come from a long line of people in the legal and judicial profession, and I will tell you that I feel really judgy when people don't call, don't return my phone call.
More often than not, you're probably right, but I do want to just slide in that benefit of doubt, you know?
Yeah, fair. No, that's. I mean, yeah. You've got a good point. You are a better human than I am. I just don't have as much patience for unprofessional behavior from people that have these listings, particularly the high-end listings where they're collecting, you know, mid five figure commission checks, and mm-hmm. they can't institute a system to actually get feedback or return a phone call or a text message. It's astounding. And that's one of the interesting things about the real estate profession is you get this spectrum of professionalism. And unfortunately, the vast majority of consumers, the buyers and sellers, have no idea what they're about to jump into, because it's relatively easy to get a real estate license. And the majority of brokerages will take anyone who could fog a mirror.
Go ahead.
Well, and so you rely on the fact that your friend is competent, but they may not be. You're loyal to your friend, or you're loyal, or you choose somebody that your friend recommended. I got a little thunder going on. And so you don't really have a frame of reference with dozens of transactions to know who's good and who's not good. Some high volume producers are really good at marketing themselves, but are really bad in service. But the consumer doesn't really have a benchmark to compare it with, because they don't do enough transactions to know.
No. And at the same time, it seems to be just very common with like anything that sales, where it's the impression that you can shop around for different people to represent you isn't widespread. People think, you know, like, I'll go with my friend because there isn't the just like the concept of shopping around for a different agent for some people is just not a thing. You end up with all sorts of people. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, well, you're right. You end up with all sorts of people that shouldn't have the listing or shouldn't have the buyer relationship that do. And the client, once they're engaged, is in an exclusive agreement with this person, and it will cost them quite a bit to break that agreement. And it may not even be legally feasible or practical to break that agreement. So be careful who you mm-hmm. choose to sign up with. So once you're engaged, you really can't shop around unless your agent is truly neglecting their standard duties. And this is standard duties in the state of Colorado. Where you are listening to this podcast, this may not be appropriate. But here in the state of Colorado, standard duties are defined. And that's like the low-hanging fruit. And proving that your agent is not doing those things would actually be a little challenging, but not impossible. With that said, it's just so much better to, as you said, shop around. But shop around, I don't think means necessarily you're looking for the best commission. And there's a right way to shop around, And there's a wrong way to shop around. The wrong way is to focus on commissions. The right way is to focus on services, because the vast majority of top agents charge commissions that are very similar to each other, to the point of irrelevance between them.
This is an excellent time to check out podcast number 9, real estate commissions.
Absolutely. Check out podcast number 9. I can't believe we're on 14.
Yeah, we're chugging along.
Well, my point, and I'll wrap that up, is to know what you're shopping around for before you start shopping around. And we have a list of questions in our past podcasts. You can ask agents, and you really want to understand what services they are providing to you relative to the competition, whether you're buying or selling. And then once you've made that choice, hopefully you've chosen well and they execute well, but you have to do your due diligence on the person that you're choosing to represent you, or the team that you're choosing to represent you. And don't believe volume is not a good proxy for quality. And years of experience is okay, but there are often agents that have been in the business a long time that have sort of given up. They're sort of done, right? They've made their money. They're nearing retirement, and they'd rather be on the beach and hang out with their grandkids than be responsive. And their version of responsive is like, I'll get back to you in 2 days. Not our version of responsive, which we'll get back to you in 15 minutes, if at all possible.
Yep.
It's a
crazy different standard.
It's astounding. I don't even know how to put more of an emphasis point on this. It's such a hidden secret of the real estate industry that the brand name on their business card is not a signal of competence. Their years in the business is also not a signal of competence, although it's closer. And it's really important to ask what services you're getting from both buyer and seller, listing agents and buyer's agents, when you're interviewing, and interview really carefully. Yep.
We have, I think a few deals back, a client whose lender would take 3 days to respond or something. I think that was somebody else's on the team, but you go and you'd ask for a letter and you'd have to wait. And by then the house is under contract.
You know? I have a colleague who I have a lot of respect for, and I like her a great deal. And she has younger kids and she doesn't work on Sundays. And that's in her voice message that she doesn't work on Sundays. And I don't know how she does it. This might be the wrong industry for her, because we work every – Sundays are when it's happening. Saturday, Sunday, and Monday are prime time in real estate. And yes, you have to battle family commitments. I have to do it all the time. I don't battle them. I blend them. But I'm often at birthday parties for nephews on the phone working on a deal, and I have to do it. And it's also why the entire team, Hamish, relies on you to offer showing coverage as a pinch hitter. If we need you, and we try not to abuse that, because it's the weekend and it's summer in Colorado and everyone wants to be hiking the trails.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Swimming in the creek. And yeah, but guess what? Sometimes you got to hop out of the creek and take a phone call and work on a deal.
It's blending. It's truly blending. You can't have that separation. I think that's a quick way to burn out or, stress yourself out trying to keep work and life separate in this industry.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. It's tricky, because it's not like you have normal work-life balance in the way that most people think of work-life balance. It's much more work-life integration, and it's a mental thing more than anything else. And it's also a training thing for your family and friends that you may have to step aside for a few minutes to work on something. And as you spend more time in this industry, you get faster and faster, and it doesn't take 3 hours to write a contract. It usually takes less than an hour. And if you have a team, someone on your team who's on call could take the first stab at drafting it, and you can just clean it up. The speed goes from hours. Used to be overnight, by the way, when I first got in this business. We'll get you an offer tomorrow morning. Now it's like we're in a war room. We're going to go through the comps. We're going to analyze the comps. I'm going to call the listing agents of the comps to get a sense of how many offers did they get. And we're going to double check, triple check this is the right house for you, discuss all of its flaws, try to talk you out of it. And if all of that's true, we're going to write an offer, and we're going to get that offer done within an hour and to you. Because we really want to make sure it's, yeah.
It's not an offer, but I got you an amend extend within like 5 minutes of you asking for it.
I went to the bathroom, Hamish, and I got back, and the amend and extend was on my in my inbox.
Yeah,
that was very. That's true. You're very fast now, but as long as we're accurate, if speed without accuracy is not good. We have to maintain less accuracy with contract dates, and well, it's still helpful, but it creates a cognitive burden, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're so fast, but we're making mistakes. As an assistant to the team, the person you're sending the contract to is now worried, are the dates right? Right? Is the legal language right? Is there something? Is the response deadline right? And even though you're licensed, the agent that's leading the deal needs to be the one double checking. So
trust but verify.
Knowing that, hopefully we don't have to verify. That's the goal. Mm-hmm. Is that you're not moving. I mean, I love the speed as long as the accuracy is there. So, back to our topic du jour.
Yeah.
Benchmarking.
A little sidebar.
What was that?
Seat was doing a thing. Not really sure.
Okay. All right. Benchmarking. So we talked about benchmarking during the listing, but benchmarking is actually just as important before the listing. And what we do is look at the sold comps and then look at the active competitors. And we do this first in a video meeting with our client. This is maybe an hour-long process. We go through all the photographs. We talk about the distinguishing characteristics of these homes. And then when we – right before we go active, we go see these houses in person. But then during the listing, we have to monitor our competition, and we have to solicit feedback from agents who actually have shown the property. That's it in a nutshell. And then, you know, when it comes to our colleagues that we refer, there's a different kind of benchmarking, right? We expect our referral partners to show up on time, be thorough, be professional, follow up. They've got different sets of benchmarks, whether we're talking about inspectors or lenders. Those are the key relationships. But we also have relationships with plumbers and HVAC people and roofers. And 20 years of that, you know who's solid and who's not. But that also can change over time with ownership changes of these businesses. So this is one of those criticized by category and praised by name. So I was at the bank yesterday, and in the parking lot, I ran into Joe Roberts. And Joe is runs a business here in Boulder with his family. I think they mostly do property management, although maybe they occasionally do a few sales here or there. Direct family members are involved, and Joe is the patriarch of the business, and I've met him many times, and he's been very professional and thorough and detailed, and he's in the parking lot in his car, and it says Roberts and Sons, so I knew who it was, and he's got his dogs with him, which is adorable. They're in the air conditioning, and I just chatted with him for a few minutes just to see how he's doing, because he's a colleague, and we've always had very good experiences in working together. They do a lot of rental inspections. Joe does anyway. And as I'm chatting with him, it occurred to me that he probably has some really good paint contractors and some really good flooring contractors who we need both of right now. And he might be willing to share those. And he readily shared them without any hesitation and gave us the background of why he's recommending them. And that was astoundingly good. And he did mention that the ownership has changed a few times with one of those referrals. But so far, they've maintained quality standards over 30 years.
Yeah, that's solid. And that's where it goes, right? Everybody, if you're worth your salt, right, you're benchmarking, you're checking your contacts, you're checking your competition. You're just always making sure that you are at the same level, if not higher than your competition, than your surroundings.
Well, that's what competition is when you're... When you're an athlete who's just running the Boulder for fun, maybe you don't care about your performance. But I can assure you the top competitors know each other well and also are doing everything they can to beat each other. And when your agent is seeking to become one of the top agents in town, they better be benchmarking and thinking about how to improve their services, not just look better, but be better. And if they're spending more time and energy marketing that they're better, they probably aren't better. because they're doing the wrong thing. But if they're spending more time and energy actually serving their clients, that's a good sign.
It's like in our fresh, right? You mentioned you're like the fresh frequency dies out because we're more busy serving our clients than writing a newsletter.
There's only so much Osmond and Hamish to go around, man. We can't, there's only so much butter to spread on the toast. And the first, this is a bad analogy. I don't know why we said toast, but the portions of the toast that get buttered first are our clients. I'm not going to do a newsletter or even this podcast unless business is handled and we have additional capacity to do business development activities like the podcast. Podcast is fun. I'm really enjoying it. Conversations with you on real estate specific topics, the feedback we're getting from agents that hear this podcast, all of it's been very positive. But it also is not appropriate for us to engage in unless we have business handled. And when we are in peak summer season, I have to also focus on why the priorities. You have to know your priorities. And my clients come first, period.
Yeah. And just off the back end of that, Fresh is out. It's our semi-weekly newsletter where we look at fresh listings, notable sales, and track market conditions. You can sign up at houseeinstein.com. There's a little sign up tab at the top.
Yeah, I'm no longer going to promise bi-weekly or weekly or even once a month. It's just too irregular. During the off season, from say roughly October through February, it might be every week, but in the peak season, it could drop to a gap of 8 weeks without a newsletter, because the newsletter takes, it's at least 8 hours worth of work. And that means reviewing the competition, reviewing new listings that have hit the market, recent sales that have hit the market, as well as looking into what's actually happening in market conditions on a broad basis. Mm-hmm. Like, we're checking what's happening relative to our listings and relative to our buyers' needs, but that's not the broad market. The broad right. market is the statistical median, the averages, what's happened in the prices, what's happened with sales volume, new listings, buildup of old or stale listings. And it's interesting, but it's not actionable.
Right. It's your broad overview.
Well, actionable information is relevant to your specific situation that you should act on within a very tight period of time. It's time limited. It's like milk in the fridge. It's going to expire. And you can't, you have to act on it quickly if you're going to act on it. And actionable information takes, so far, human intelligence. Some point, maybe it'll be AI, but right now it takes human intelligence relative to your specific real estate search or your specific home that you're selling. It's relative to your strategy. And it is not like this generalized statistics are close to worthless when it comes to developing a strategy for your specific needs.
Yeah. You're selling it.
Well, it's interesting. No, I'd like to know what's going on. You should know what's going on, right? It would be like you love a stock, but you don't care about the S&P. Well, that's great that you love this stock, but that doesn't mean it's a good time. Like if the whole broad market's about to fall apart, which it's not. Real estate is not like the S&P that way. But not normally. We've had downturns too. But if you're in a secular downturn, right? In the broad markets in a downturn, are you feeling comfortable and confident about the home acquisition you're about to write an offer on? Or are you about to catch a falling knife?
Right.
What's happening here? So you do need to know what's happening in the broad market, but you really need to know what's happening relative to your specific needs, especially for a primary home. For secondary homes, vacation homes, investment properties, the broader market may have more relevance. But when you've got kids to put in school and you have a limited period of time to find a home and you're relocating to Boulder.
Functional requirements, like, all that, yeah.
How would you like to stay married?
Right. Do you need a garage?
Because, well, fixating on whether you're catching a falling knife or not may be the wrong answer, because the downturns tend to be short and shallow, and the upturns tend to be long. And really, people, especially in the city of Boulder, we strongly advise clients to focus on finding the right house, because it's so hard to find the right house. You could spend years. And in fact, some of our clients have done that. They've bought a temporary house that fits the budget, fits the needs, but is not their dream home. It's just going to work for them for while they're still shopping for the dream home.
Yeah. Makes sense.
All right. Well, that's our topic on benchmarking listings. It's an ongoing process. It's something that you cannot ignore. And it's something that the vast majority of agents don't appear to be doing. And I don't think the vast majority of sellers know to even ask the question. And so that's what we wanted to bring to your attention in today's podcast. We'll call this a shorty. It's only been, about 36 minutes. So we'll call this a short cast, a short podcast for today. And hope you've enjoyed it. If you're looking for us, you will find Hamish and I and all the other agents at the house at House Einstein. You'll find us at houseeinstein.com. And anything else to add?
I think that's it. Do check out the newsletter. It's a great deal of fun to put it together when we have time, and it's a nice read.
It is a nice read. It's also a nice review of what's sold recently. Mm-hmm. You can get a sense of my thought process on evaluating home sales. I appreciate that plug, Hamish. Do check it out. And thanks, everyone, for joining us today. We'll catch you next time.
All righty. Take care.